Oregon State Legislature, 2007. It's Friday, January 19th. And I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2203, 2204, and 2205. Steve, would you go ahead and give us a quick recap on these three bills?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2203 applies provisions of the Oregon Consumer Finance Act to lenders that make loans to consumers in Oregon, requires the director of the Department of Business and Consumer and Business Services to develop and implement a system to permit lenders to comply with lender obligations under the law. House Bill 2204 limits maximum rate of interest on car title loans to 36%, also limits origination fees, collection fees, and loan terms for title lenders. And House Bill 2205 requires persons in business of making consumer finance loans to obtain a license, defines consumer finance loan, and declares an emergency.
First, I'd like to call up Paul Cosgrove, please.
Sure.
Oh, excuse me, Corey Streisinger. Forget my agencies at the bottom of the list.
I need to get here earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and with me is David Tatman, the Administrator of our Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk about all three of these bills, which, as with the check cashing bill that we talked to you about earlier in the week, are also part of the Governor's priority consumer protection agenda. And these three bills have a common theme. All of them address the issue of high-cost consumer lending, and all of them follow up on the payday lending bill that was enacted during the 2006 special session. And by way of background, we in the Department of Consumer and Business Services and our Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, we license three different types of consumer finance lenders specifically. And the three types of lending businesses that we license are payday lenders, which are short-term loans, vehicle title lenders, also short-term loans, and then what we call conventional consumer finance lending. And the bills in front of you deal with all three of those types of lending in different ways. And before I jump into the specifics, I want to make a point that I made when I was talking about the check cashing bill as well, which is that loans are important. It's important to Oregonians to have the ability to get short-term credit, and it's not our intent to eliminate these types of loans, but rather to make sure that they are fair and equitable to Oregon consumers. We also are interested in expanding opportunities, and I think some of you are aware that we work closely with Oregon's credit union industry to offer short-term payday-type lending to people who are in need as well. So we do look for a variety of tools to making loans available to people. I do want to start with these bills on payday lending. And a payday loan, as you probably know, is a short-term loan for a period of 60 days or less, and typically made to someone with a regular paycheck and due at the person's next payday. If the borrower cannot pay, they can roll the loan over upon payment of another fee. And currently, because the new law has not gone into effect yet, fees for these loans are in the range of $15 to $20 per $100 borrowed, and the typical term of a loan tends to be in the range of 17 or 18 days. So expressed as an annual percentage rate, interest for these loans can be 3, 4, 500%. And the special session bill, which goes into effect on July 1st of this year, capped the fees and interest rates for payday loans at a rate of 36% APR plus a $10 per hundred origination fee, required the term to be at least 31 days, limited the amount of renewals or rollovers to two, and provided a waiting period, provided that a new payday loan could not be made within 7 days of the expiration of a previous loan. So House Bill 2203, the first of the bills in front of you, deals primarily, although not exclusively, with payday loans, and it follows up on the special session bill in three ways. First, this bill would direct DCBS to implement a database that will enable us, as well as the payday lending industry, to track compliance with the restrictions set out in the new law. Similar databases are currently required in five other states. Lenders would be required to enter data on each of their loans into the database, and we could then check compliance with the interest rates and the rollover period, or the rollovers and the waiting period. And a lender could also use the database to check that the waiting period had been complied with. That is, a lender considering a loan to a borrower could find out whether that loan was within the 7-day period of a prior loan, even if that prior loan had been made by a different payday lender. So this bill would establish that type of a compliance database. It would be funded on a per-transaction fee, which could, under this bill, be passed on to the borrower. And we would set that fee by rule, and the experience in other states has been that it is under $1 per loan transaction. The requirement to use the database under this bill would also apply to car title, to vehicle title loans, which I'm going to talk about a little later on. The second issue addressed by this bill is payday lending by out-of-state lenders, often internet loans. And you probably see those the banner ads on internet sites saying, click here for a payday loan or for an instant loan. And our view is that if the protections in Oregon law are appropriate to protect Oregon borrowers, they are appropriate whether or not the lender has a brick-and-mortar presence here or merely an electronic presence here. And so this bill would extend the provisions of our law to anyone who makes a loan to an Oregon resident who's physically present in Oregon at the time of the loan or who uses an Oregon bank account for the payments. And remember that these generally are, the payment terms are secured by either a post-dated check or, in the case of an internet loan, an ACH authorization. So the lender will know where the borrower is located and where the borrower's bank account is located at the time of making the loan. And just to give you an example, in the field of insurance, which is also regulated at the state level, it is not legal to sell an insurance product to an Oregonian that hasn't been approved as required by Oregon law. And so if you are attempting to buy insurance over the Internet, which you can certainly do, you enter your zip code and you will not be sold a product which isn't legal in Oregon. So it is not difficult for a lender offering loans over the Internet to find out where the borrower is located. Now, obviously, enforcement is an issue that we would need to deal with, and our proposal is that we would actually, for a lender that's required to be licensed in Oregon and is not, we would make that loan uncollectible, which is how how enforcement works in a couple of other areas. Construction contractors, for example, if you are not licensed, you cannot collect. And if you are a pawnbroker, unlicensed, that provision also exists in Oregon law today. So that is how we are proposing to incent compliance. We would have a safe harbor for someone who is inadvertently not licensed but otherwise complies with Oregon law. And it would be our intent to do our best to notify lenders that are using internet to loan to Oregonians of the requirements of the bill if it passes. The third provision in this bill deals with collection costs and addresses an area where we believe there's actually a possibility of confusion in the special session law. In restricting fees, that provision could be read not to allow the normal types of collection expenses to the extent already permitted by law. And so what we would propose in this bill to carry out what we believe was actually the intent would be to say that to the extent that collection costs are normally recoverable in the event of a defaulted loan, the payday loan would legislation would not change that. Moving on to House Bill 2204, this bill would restrict the terms of car title loans, vehicle title loans, to mirror the restrictions in the payday loan legislation. Currently, there are no limits on the interest rates and fees that lenders can charge for title loans. These are short-term loans of 60 days or less that are secured by a title to your motor vehicle or your recreational vehicle or boat. and that are repaid with a single payment, generally the same way as payday loans. And the interest rates and fees tend to be very similar to those as we see in the payday industry, percent APRs of 300% or more. And current law allows these loans to be renewed up to 6 times after the first loan with a new fee each time. So this bill would mirror, as I said, the payday lending law. It would limit the annual percentage rate to 36%, 3% a month, plus an origination fee of up to 10%, that is $10 per hundred. It would limit renewals to 2, and it would provide that the loans would need to be for 31 days or more. Fees on dishonored checks would be capped. That's also in the payday legislation. And as with payday loans, a new loan could not be made within 7 days of the expiration of a prior loan. So, as I mentioned also, House Bill 2203 would also require title lenders to participate in the compliance database. House Bill 2204 does contain an emergency law making it effective July 1st, 2007, which is the same as the effective date for the payday legislation. House Bill 2205, our third bill, deals with conventional consumer finance lending. Conventional consumer finance lenders traditionally are in a different type of lending business. They tend to make installment loans for longer periods of time, 6 months, a year, several years. They are based on creditworthiness of the borrower. They are amortized installment loans that are paid on a fully amortizing periodic payment basis. And interest rates on these loans traditionally don't approach those charged by payday and title lenders. But following the special session, we saw many of Oregon's payday lenders apply for licenses as conventional lenders because the payday loan limits in that new law apply only to payday loans as defined by law to be loans of 60 days or less. So our concern was that payday lenders were intending to avoid the provisions of that law by switching to making 61-day loans under a conventional license, but otherwise essentially the same type of lending business with the same interest rates. So to prevent this, we issued rules that went into effect in late December, more clearly defining the types of lending that could take place under a conventional consumer finance license. The new rules provide that most loans under this license type, 90%, have to be for a term of 6 months or more and have to be fully amortizing installment loans with periodic payments. They have to be based on the borrower's creditworthiness, and the lender has to employ experienced personnel who are appropriate for this type of lending activity. Now, we believe that these new rules are fully authorized by existing law, and the department has authority to issue these rules. But during the rulemaking process, we got comments from several payday lenders to the effect that, in their view, our rules were not authorized by existing law. And we would prefer to avoid the possibility of a legal challenge. So for that reason, in House Bill 2205, we are proposing essentially codification of the rules that we've just recently put into effect. And so the bill would provide that a conventional lender using a conventional consumer finance license would, in fact, be limited to the type of lending business that is defined by our rules and that traditionally these types of lenders have entered into. We really appreciate the participation of many of the financial industry stakeholders in helping shape these rules. Each of the bills will need some technical amendments, and we are working with stakeholders to ensure that the language carries out our intent. And in particular, with respect to House Bill 2205, I should point out that due to the scheduling for pre-session filed bills, the bill was drafted prior to the completion of our rulemaking process. And during that rulemaking process, we got very helpful input from a lot of the stakeholders. And so we do want to conform the bill to the way the rules came out in the end. So there will be technical amendments actually on all three of these bills to address comments and concerns that we have heard. With that, I do ask for your support for these bills, and I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Streisinger. Committee still, any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you very much. I have a question. Thank you very much for your testimony, by the way. I just have a question about whether there are other types of lending that are defined by DCBS rules in addition to this particular?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, yes. We regulate mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers for mortgage lending, although conventional consumer finance lenders also do real estate lending. And we also license banks and credit unions that, of course, also can engage in lending practices. Oregon's law on lending practices, interestingly, has evolved with different sets of laws and different sets of rules based on different license types rather than addressing loans as a type of activity overall. So yes, we do license those additional types of lenders. We also license pawnbrokers, who, of course, make loans based on pledges of personal property.
Thank you.
David, follow up.
I just wanted to make sure that... Thank you. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure the type of lending is defined by DCBS rules as well as the provision of licensing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, that is the way these bills are moving. That is, the type of lending for a conventional consumer finance loan in statute today is not. It is limited to consumer finance lending, which is a loan for personal, family, and household purposes, and I believe of $50,000 or less. But other than that, the type of lending is now defined by our rule, but not defined in detail in statute.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Not only am I new to this process, but I'm new to this issue. So the fact that there are three of these together adds to my confusion, but I'm trying. And my question, I guess, is, first of all, you alluded to working with the industry and getting some feedback after the special session legislation. Can you say more about that feedback? Because I'm hearing that their reaction is pretty severe in terms of their business being hurt altogether or may not being. I don't know if that's a fact, but is my question at all clear?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam. I think you will hear from the payday lending. The payday lending industry was quite vocal during the special session in their belief that the special session legislation would severely damage their industry, and you may hear the same from title lenders today. The conventional lenders have worked closely with us on the rulemaking because they their preference is for their type of license to remain the type of business that they have traditionally done. So those when I say we have worked with the industry stakeholders, our rulemaking, of course, involved an advisory group broadly representative, but I am certainly not here to tell you that the payday lenders or the title lenders agree with the approach that we're taking. And, in fact, you may hear from representatives of the title loan industry today in particular as to some changes that they are requesting.
May I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up, Representative Gilliam.
Can you say more about how you feel this might go for that industry, or is it too soon to tell? I mean, is it as serious as I sort of suspect it is, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I cannot make a prediction, and I said during the special session as well that I could not make that prediction. We are aware of at least, I believe in Florida, one fairly large firm that does title lending on a fairly broad basis that is consistent with these types of interest rates and fees. I don't have the specifics in front of me, but I'd be happy to provide that. But I know you will hear from the industry that they cannot survive under these terms.
Representative Galizio.
Mr. Reisinger, I had a question about the data, the database element. Who would be liable if there were to be a breach of, in other words, I'm just reading about how that would be, you know, talk about a vendor, and then the vendor perhaps contracts with the loan. So where would the liability lie? In other words, if I go in to take out a loan, and this database, there's some kind of a breach, and I find out later my information has been used by Chair Holvey to purchase a new car, where does the liability
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellizio, of course, the issue of liability for data breaches is a broad issue that exists today because we have databases involving personally identifiable information. Many private businesses do. Many government agencies do. And it is a very serious concern. And of course, that's one of the reasons we are trying to address some of the data breach issues through our ID theft bill. So with this database, the answer would be no different than with respect to any other type of database. Under the law of negligence, if there were negligence, my assumption is that liability would exist. But if there were a breach that was not due to an actionable type of negligence, then there would not be that type of liability. Certainly, creation of any database does contain, does create a concern about access to the database and security of the database. There are private vendors, and our intent would be to contract for this database. And there are private vendors who do provide this service, one in particular that's providing it in a number of other states. And a representative of that company did testify during the special session before one of the interim committee, not during, prior to the special session, before one of the interim committees. And I know he would be happy to come and appear before this committee to talk about how a database works and what types of security his company at least puts in place.
Thank you. Follow-up question, Representative Lee.
It's a follow-up in terms of, it's a second question, but it's a different question. Car title loans versus the payday loans, are they materially enough, similar enough, so that, in other words, are you, you're confident that they're similar enough in the way they function that the rules that apply to payday work really well with the car title? Or are there significant differences that you think are important?
Mr. Chair, Representative Glazio, there are differences, of course. We believe the statute would work in terms of its enforceability and applicability, but there are differences, and some members of the industry will probably be pointing out those differences to you. But one clear example is that you can only have one car title loan at a time on a particular car, as opposed to multiple payday lending. So there may be differences that would make a difference from a public policy standpoint as well. Those are obviously issues for you to judge. Our belief is that interest rates in the 300-500% range are not acceptable for Oregonians, but there's a whole range of acceptable public policy decisions to be made as to how to structure any type of law that deals with this topic.
Thank you.
Representative Gillingham.
Just a quick question first before I ask another question. When does the special session legislation, which I was not part of, obviously, go into effect?
July 1st, 2007.
Okay. So,
and we'll be out of session.
I heard that.
Sure.
I heard that.
That will be done.
And so my question is following up on the software question, if I may. Is that all right?
Follow up?
So if we're, I'll put it this way, if we're not sure how the legislation from the special session is going to shake out in terms of the future of the industry, that's my supposition, then did you all think about delaying the development of a software or database partly because of the cost? Because I think we all, I know it's less than a dollar from your testimony, but adding more cost to an already sort of difficult situation seems to me to be significant. So is there any wisdom into letting this shake out after July to see how the industry responds before we invest in a software or database?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, that's an excellent question. The legislature has met only every other year, therefore has not given the opportunity to make changes more frequently. The database, we believe, is important to ensure compliance with the provisions of the special session law, but if there is no lending industry, and again, you will probably hear from some concerned lenders that there will not be, yes, we do not have interest in creating something that is useless. On the other hand, a private vendor system that is an off-the-shelf system that already exists would not take state startup dollars. It would be a per-transaction-based system that would be tailored exactly to the need, in our view. So certainly if the issue were a large upfront investment of state resources to develop a system that might be minimally used, in our view that would raise a different set of issues.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little follow-up from that question. Are there other states that we can look at for historical perspective to judge what the reaction might be to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I think, if I recall correctly, during the special session, the testimony was, and I believe our own data shows, that although there are a number of states that have significantly restricted short-term lending, Oregon's law does go further than other states have gone. So we don't have an exact model to look at.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, Ms. Streisinger, I just one question on that particular issue. Are you aware of any states that have implemented these kinds of regulations that aren't the same as ours, but maybe a little less restrictive? Are you aware of any situations where the industry has been significantly impacted with the amount of services that are available in their states?
Mr. Chair, when we looked at that issue during the special session, we found that in the states that were the most closely analogous, the industry continued to exist and thrive. And in addition, as I mentioned, that we do have the example of the car title lending successful operation in Florida that is looking to expand into other states consistent with these interest rates. In addition, the pawnbroking industry in Oregon has been subject actually to the 36% plus 10% origination fee for quite some time. So that's the evidence that we have. As I've said, I do not have a crystal ball, and I certainly would not want to offer you any guarantees one way or the other.
Thank you very much, and I can appreciate that, not having a crystal ball. Any other questions? Representative Nelson.
Yes,
good to have you here.
Thank you, and it's great to be here. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I didn't realize the English language was going to be that critical an issue here in the state, but I guess it is. It's very important. Thank you for being here today. Have we done our studies on failures of repayment of loans, and do we know what those rates are? And also, I'm kind of curious about the age requirements for these individuals getting these loans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we did a fair amount of looking at default rates during the special session. Again, data, there isn't an enormous amount of data, but based on the data that we had available, which was from the industry, some of the testimony from industry representatives, as well as a couple of these companies are publicly traded, and so financial data is available. What we heard is that the default rates are actually very comparable to more traditional types of bank mm-hmm. lending. And David, do you recall any of the more specific detail about default rates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the default rate for this industry, the payday lending industry I'm referring to, was actually lower than some of our other lenders. Part of that is based upon the way it's calculated. Each loan and its subsequent rollover is calculated as a separate loan, and so the percentages don't reflect the same way a long-term loan, either by a consumer finance company or by a bank or credit union, would be booked. And so I think I won't say it's apple and orange, but it's not apple and apple. And then I don't believe we've ever addressed the issue about age, whether there should be a minimum age for somebody taking out a loan. That's a legal issue, I think, for contracting purposes.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I guess I'm asking if anybody else could be held liable, if these are young individuals, could be held liable for the repayment of these loans.
Because
you see a bunch of young people hopping to it, you know, and then not having the means to get themselves out of trouble.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I actually don't know at what age one can legally contract, but I assume that it's 18. And if a co-signer on the loan, if there is a co-signer on the loan, the co-signer, of course, would be liable. But there's nothing different or unique about these types of loans than other types of loans.
Okay. If I could just follow up. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. The nature of the loan is made based upon a checking account, so presumably the individual already has opened a checking account in his or her name, and also on a pay stub or some source of income, so again in that person's name. So there's some determination that they have some means for getting into this situation and presumably getting out of that situation. So I don't think that it necessarily would lead to a parent or somebody else being liable.
Thank you. And Mr. Patman, can you identify yourself for the record so people that are listening know who you are and recognize your
distinct voice associated with your name?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm David Patman, the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, a division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Thank you very much. No other questions. Seeing no other questions from the committee, thank you so much for your testimony. Very insightful, and we'll move on with the next people to testify. And I know I have two people in the audience who have looming schedules that they need to remove. I don't know which one's the most imperative, Paul Cosgrove or Mark Nelson. Who wants to go first? Who's in the biggest panic?
Mr. Chairman, he didn't move fast enough, so I'll assume. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Financial Services Association, and that is the association of what Ms. Streisinger was describing in her testimony as conventional consumer finance companies, and that includes some very old Oregon-based companies, been around 60 or 70 years, like United Finance Company, Reliable Credit, and also the consumer finance subsidiaries of some of the country's biggest banks, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, HSBC. I'm here just to talk about House Bill 2205. We were one of the very active participants in the rulemaking process, and we supported the adoption of the rules, and we support House Bill 2205 for the same reasons, although we agree that because of the timing of the bill introduction, there need to be some technical amendments, and we're working with the department on doing that. The reason we support that bill is until a few years ago, with the rise of payday lending and title lending, Chapter 725 of Oregon Revised Statutes we considered as our statute. It was our licensing statute. Who was licensed under there were these conventional consumer finance companies. And I think it's fair to say that the system worked well and were audited, and I think, generally speaking, have very clean audits, and everybody has a few complaints now and again. But I think it was a well-functioning, well-regulated industry. When the rise of payday and title lending, they started to get licenses under that statute. And from that point forward, frankly and honestly, we've been trying to keep ourselves out of the line of fire that has been directed against the payday and title lenders in this state for the reasons that you've all heard. So these rules and the statute to codify those rules is an attempt to define what it was that we did in our conventional consumer finance business. Anybody who wants to comply with those rules would be entitled to get that kind of license, and we're happy to have competition. It's quite a competitive industry. But that if people are doing other kinds of lending business, they need to be licensed and regulated under other areas and other rules and other statutes. So House Bill 2205 is an attempt to make that separation, and therefore we urge your support of that bill. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Cosgrove from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add one other thing. I appreciate that the department has been spending a lot of time on this issue, and I would like to personally thank both Ms. Streisinger and Mr. Tatman, and there were other staff members who worked for months. We had long work group meetings, meeting over a period of months to get to this point, and I appreciate their help and their work on this.
Well, thank you very much for that. Representative Nelson, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Nice to see you, Paul. Maybe you've already done this. What is this cap on interest and fees that we're referring to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that is not part of House Bill 2205. That's part of the other two, both the special session bill, which had a cap on interest and fees on payday lenders, the special session bill you passed, and one of the other bills here, I think it's 2204, has a cap on title lending fees and interest. 2205 deals not with interest rates, but with lending practices and requirements and the training required of a branch manager and what can be done and what can't be done, but doesn't have a cap on interest or fees in 2205.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So perhaps in the backgrounder on this, we need to take that out of the background.
Thank you, Mr. Cosgrove. I would like to request that you would give us something in writing and follow up with our committee administrator so that we can have a little documentation of you doing that instead of just the sound bites. Appreciate
I will be happy to do so, Mr. Chairman, and I can do that probably in conjunction with talking about the technical amendments that come in, and I'll be happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call up Mark Nelson and Alan Treseder.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Northwest Title Loans. I'd like to first make a few comments about House Bill 2203. As has been mentioned by previous witnesses, title loans are loans that are made on a vehicle. Typically, an individual owns one vehicle, sometimes two vehicles, but in order to make that loan, the title must be free and clear. That's very different than the payday loan situation where an individual can go to multiple payday loan companies and borrow on the payday and make multiple and receive multiple loans. In this case, you can only make one loan on one car's title. Following that, you know, our concern about 2203 is in Section 5, which sets up the, on page 3, which sets up the system to determine how many loans a particular individual has. We would submit that since we're only making one loan, it really doesn't make any sense to put us in that barrel with the payday loans. What I believe the legislature is, or the legislation is trying to get at, is to see how many multiple loans a particular person has at a given time, and to enforce the particular provisions of the bill that was passed in the special session. We believe this is an added cost to the consumer when, in fact, they're only taking one loan. And we're not asking anybody else in the lending industry outside of payday loans, in this case title loans, to have this function. In other words, other loan licenses that in effect usually make one loan. So we would ask that in terms of Section 5, that that section does not include title loans. Moving on to House Bill 2204, which is what we call the rate cap bill. Again, I want to emphasize the differences between a payday where you have a potential or you had a potential of multiple loans and the single loan made as a car title loan. If the purpose of the legislation, and it's been testified that it is not the purpose, but if the purpose of the legislation by some is to put the title loan industry out of business, this will do that. We guarantee you that under this bill, the title loan industry will not continue. And I know you heard that in the special session from the payday industry. We believe that is absolutely true as well. As written, it will put the payday industry out of business, and this bill, as written, will put the car title out of business. Again, if that's the purpose, then we would say that's the choice of the body, then that's the choice of the body. We would submit, however, that there are some things that, if were amended in the particular bill, that we believe we could economically still stay in business. One of those is a $10 origination fee. If that was moved to $20, we believe that the industry could continue. In addition to that, on page 2, line 10, the issue of the waiting period being extended from 1 day to 7 days, we would request that that remain the same as 1 day. We believe those two elements are critical in order to keep the industry and business. If it's not the case and you want to move forward, our people have looked at the economics of the bill, and we can tell you without qualification you will put the car title industry out of business. Mm-hmm. Again, we want to make the distinction that we are dealing with one loan, one vehicle. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alan Tressinger. I also represent Northwest Title Loan. And I just wanted to address a couple of concerns that members of this committee expressed. Representative Galizio, you asked, is there a difference between the payday lender and the title lender? And we would argue that there is an enormous difference. And the biggest difference being that the often stated or expressed views of some of abuses in the payday loan industry can't exist in the title loan business. We lend money based upon a single title to a single automobile. So you can't have multiple loans at the same time. You have one title, you have one automobile, and you have one loan. And that's just the fact of life, and that's what we lend money on. Some people call this a secured loan. We kind of have a little sparkle in our eye when we talk about a secured loan on a 1968 Pontiac with 250,000 miles on it. But it is nonetheless a secured loan. Secondly, Representative Riley, you asked about the future of this industry. And the company we represent is part of a national title loan corporation that operates title loan companies in multiple states. They assure us that if you pass 2204 as it is, they're out of business. They no longer operate in Oregon. It would be the most restrictive legislation in the United States. And we think that the two, what we would think, modest amendments that we offer to you could keep this industry alive. It would continue to be a source of some much-needed short-term revenue by Oregonians. And it provides what we believe is a needed resource for some people who are in dire straits in a moment's notice. We're not asking you to change the APR cap. We're not asking for any other changes in the regulations proposed by the department other than the origination fee and the time limit. And we think with those two amendments, we could continue to operate in Oregon. However, if you don't want us to operate in Oregon anymore, you pass this bill that it is, and we won't be here.
Representative Galizio.
What kind of profit margin would be necessary for the car title industry to survive? I mean, what's needed to survive?
There has to be a profit.
Okay, so what's the
status quo? We're losing money on every transaction. We can't make it up in volume.
Okay, so this would mean you'd lose money on every transaction. So currently, I mean, what's the typical sort of profit margin? I mean, I don't know how many of these are publicly traded companies or...
I don't know the answer to that question.
You make a statement that...
Representative Galizio, can you address your questions through the chair?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
Control this dialogue a little
bit. Yeah, no. Just to make a statement that... Mr. Chair... Yeah, when you make a statement that the car title loan, that the industry, you know, you go out of business.
Yep.
That's a huge statement. So I guess I'm trying to, as a policymaker, try to understand the status quo. Our profitability is here. These are our margins. This would mean. So I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galizio, I don't have the answer to that off the top of my head. I will make a phone call as soon as we're done with this meeting and see if we can share that information with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Question, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tressler and Mr. Nelson, I have a question I hope isn't too hypothetical. If you had a married couple and they owned two cars and both of them had their names on both titles, but they only had one income, for example, you could have the consumer, one of them, go and get a title loan with one title and then another title loan with another title, but still have the same amount of income to pay back the loans, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, that's correct. It is a title. And if they have two cars and two titles, they can get a loan on each car. but only one loan on that car at a time, on each car.
Thank you.
Question, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one. I can understand the $20 instead of $10. I get what that's about. I don't get the why the one day instead of 7 days. What is that? Why is that one of your issues?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, these loans are typically average around $300. And they are loans that are made to individuals who have an immediate type of need. And that that need doesn't disappear. They just find perhaps a different place to fill the need. And so the one day is really a business practice. We want to make the loan. And if an individual comes in and has to leave for 7 days, we believe we're going to lose some business. As a result of that, quite candidly, we believe that will cost us business, and it will send the individual someplace else.
Follow up,
Representative Riley.
Thank you. So, one of the reasons that I think it's important to have these short term loans is to take care of a short term problem. And what I hear you telling me is that you want to make this a continual loan to take care of a continuing problem. And that bothers me some. Can you address that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Back in, I believe it was 1999, we went through a very elaborate process in looking at title loans in particular. Mm-hmm. And the current statutory scheme that was put together was one of regulation of the title loan industry. That did not occur on the payday side or on a much lower basis. So we thought we went through that process. And at that point, the legislature set a six loan limit. This piece of legislation, six rollovers, excuse me. This particular legislation reduces the six to two. And we are not objecting to that.
Follow up, Representative Riley.
I didn't hear an answer to my question. What I heard was what happened several years ago. The issue is the continuation. What you're really talking about is continuing a loan for as long as you want. Instead, you have two rollovers, but you can make the new loan the next day. What is that? How does that stack up? I mean, if we're going to limit it to two rollovers, I understand why you wouldn't complain if you can make the new loan right away. So it still seems to me like you're trying to make a short-term loan, which is, in my opinion, designed to take care of an immediate need, a one-time need, and make it a loan which takes care of a ongoing need, and that bothers me, and I didn't hear an answer to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, you're correct to an extent. I mean, there are ample evidence that there are some individuals out there who continue, you know, roll over the loans, whether it's a payday or whether it's a title. The rollover limit in here tries to address that, but I'm not here to tell you that there aren't individuals out there who do that. We probably can come back and tell you what our average number of rollovers are on the title loans, and that may give you a little bit better picture.
I'd be interested in that. Thank you.
One more question.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Truster and Mr. Nelson, if passage of this bill will put an entire industry out of business, as you contend, I think I'd like some more information. Particularly, I'd like to know how many title loan businesses are operating in the state, and most importantly, I would like to know how many of them are only doing title loans, or are they doing other types of lending as well? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, we can give you that information for our company. There are other title loan corporations operating in Oregon. We represent one that has a number of entities in Oregon, but we can share that information for you based upon our own company. And Mr. Chairman, I apologize to the committee that our principal isn't here, our general counsel, weather issues both here and in Atlanta prohibited our general counsel to be here today. If you were to have another hearing on this issue, she would appear here and you wouldn't have to deal with the two of us. You could deal with somebody who actually operates daily in the industry and can answer those questions.
Somebody knows what they're talking
somebody
about?
Knows what they're talking about. So it doesn't get in shallow water very quickly.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps the DCBS people who are here today have that information as well, and hopefully we can get that from somebody. Thank you.
Representative Galizia.
Yeah, it's kind of a follow-up to what Representative Bonamici said. I think it would be useful for us to know, and I don't think you would have this information because you're not representing all of the companies, but, you know, how many Oregonians are currently employed by, you know, in this industry? And so when you talk about losing the industry, what, you know, the impact of that, I think that information would be useful.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galizia, I can tell you for our company, we have over 100 employees in Oregon. They make minimally $11 to $12 an hour. Our managers make about $32,000 a year. We have full range of employee benefits available to those employees. That's just our industry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cosgrove talked about a work group for 2205. Were you part of a work group for this one relating to your industry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam, we were part of the 2205 rulemaking process. We did participate in that. We haven't been part of developing this particular legislation that's embodied in 2204. Or 03.
May I have a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative.
So in a work group related to these subjects, obviously there are folks that simply want to make this industry better, and which is why they're promulgating these. Were you able to express your concern that your company and maybe the industry would go out of business if they were put forward? And if so, what was the response?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam, 2205 really dealt with the consumer loan, installment loan license, not the title loans. So generally, I found the department fairly easy to work with in developing those rules, and I think Mr. Cosgrove would agree. The process was very open. I mean, we had disagreements, and we voiced those, and the department, in many cases, adopted some of our concerns. So I thought that process went well.
I keep mixing up my title and my other types of loans, so I have another question if you'll allow it.
Representative Gilliam.
So on the point of title loans, have you, and this, you're in the business to be a profitable business, but I still would like to ask you, in your opinion, if this passes and it's the end of your time in Oregon, your company's time, what do you think happens to the folks in a temporary or difficult situation? Where do they go? What happens to them?
You have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of consumers who will not have a place to go. Now, the credit unions are making some effort in that area, but as I understand it, you've got to join the credit union. You've got to have a checking account. And I don't pretend to know all the rules, but there are some limitations. And you have a lot of people, and this is why this industry has exploded throughout the country, because there's all kinds of need and people don't have a place to go. That's why it exists. I mean, we made over 700,000 loans in this state in terms of payday and, I believe, title. I think it's both of them combined. So there's a tremendous need. I mean, if you went out and talked to the people who walk into these stores, there are virtually no complaints that have been received by the Attorney General or the department. Because it's meeting a real need out there. Now, we can decide that the interest rate is too high and that we need to step in or you all need to step in and do something about that. But I don't know where these people go. I don't know what they did before these two types of loans.
Thank you. Question, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Holby. And thank you for being here, Alan and Mark. What is this interest rate? Does it differ from the title loan to the payday loan business?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that is correct. I mean, the amount of interest is over, in some cases, 300%.
In your business?
In our business. And I remember about 5 or 6 years ago doing a spreadsheet that actually did by percentages the cost of each expense item for the business. And quite honestly, in the Senate and in the conference committee, that really turned people's heads to just see how difficult it is to make money in this business. Because you have a lot of loans that don't get paid back, and that's why you have such a high interest rate in order to cover those expenses.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. Mark, could you tell us, what is that default rate?
I'd have to go back and check to see what it is now. Then I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 8, 9, 10%.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions from the committee? Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for letting us go.
Next, I'd like to bring up Angela Martin and Laura Etherton. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice to be back here.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and let us hear your testimony.
Certainly. For the record, my name is Angela Martin. I'm here representing Our Oregon. Start by thanking you again for the opportunity to testify on this issue. This session, lawmakers will be considering a full slate of issues aimed at helping more Oregon families thrive. Issues like education funding, health care reform, affordable housing proposals. Legislative leaders have really signaled their intent to make important investments in Oregon families. The consumer lending and banking proposals before this committee today represent an opportunity to help ensure that the economic gains families stand to realize from the improved access to education, health care, and family wage jobs, that they're not squandered on overpriced financial services. Earlier this week, I believe it was 2 days ago, I shared the story of a woman from Tigard who was paying $32 every 2 weeks to cash her paycheck. Today I'd like to share another small story of yet another woman who was brave enough to share her story with us. Candy is raising her 8-year-old daughter alone, working graveyard shift delivering newspapers. She cashes her paycheck at the same store where she's taken out several payday loans. She explained that last Christmas she took out a loan for $250 and over 4 months paid $500 to pay that loan back. According to her calculation, she was paying 5.4% interest, an estimate far lower than the triple-digit figure she was actually paying. There's a common theme that runs through all the stories Oregonians have shared with us and about their experience with the high-cost lenders, and that is agreement that the fees and charges are high, but they don't feel like there's much they can do given their situation. Wages aren't quite covering all their expenses. A spot on their banking record has shut them out of mainstream financial banks. Or their lack of financial knowledge limits their perception of cost-effective options that may actually be available to them. Regardless of the reason, the outcome is the same. Thousands of dollars are spent on high-priced financial services. Earlier, I have testified on our opinion that credit is important, and we've seen the history of credit and what it can do to add to a family's wealth, wealth-building types of credit. There is also credit that is wealth-stripping, and those are the types of credit products that we are talking about today. They're stripping the assets from families, whether it's their paycheck or their car, that is being stripped from their meager ability to build wealth for their families. The bills before you today, House Bill 2203, 2204, and 2205, would make significant and important improvements in the consumer financial protections. I'm going to take a minute to speak about several of them individually. And I'm going to start with 2204. We support applying the short-term payday loan limits to car title lending. Based on several of the comments that we've heard today, I have some comments in response. First, I'd like to talk about the proposal for moving the origination fee from $10 per 100 to $20 per 100, and simply point out what this would do for a typical $500 car title loan. Taking out that $500 car title loan under the proposal that's before you today would allow for a $50 origination fee for that one-month loan. The counter proposal that we heard would move that to $100 overhead fee, origination fee, for a $500 loan. I think it's safe to say that our position on that is an unreasonable amount for such a short-term small loan. The other comment I would like to make is I heard that the abuses cannot exist within the car title because you can only take out one loan at a time. Let me be clear. Our understanding of the abuse is the cost of these loans. In taking out one single loan at simply 300% interest is an abuse, and that's what we're working to stop with these types of regulations. Again, want to offer my support for the proposals and commend the work of the DCBS staff and the director, who have clearly made it a priority to address some of the most egregious abuses in the consumer lending market. I also want to take a few minutes to speak about 2205. High-cost predatory lenders have a long track record of evading state laws intended to protect our cash-strapped consumers. In an effort to end predatory high-cost lending, lawmakers across the nation have tightened the rules for specific loan licenses. We did that here during the last special session. Quickly, we saw that our lenders here, who were covered by that specific license, found a way around those laws that you put into place. The same thing is happening in other states. For example, in Virginia, car title lenders are legally evading the state's 36% small loan law by offering loans under a different kind of license. Lenders in Iowa, Kansas, and Pennsylvania have used similar tactics to evade their state lending laws. In Pennsylvania, we see Advance America, which is the country's largest payday lender, has launched a new product called the Choice Line of Credit. It has a low interest rate of 5.9%, which sounds pretty good, but the borrower must also pay a monthly fee of $149 for a $500 line of credit. Someone who borrows $500, makes the minimum payments over 2 years, will end up paying $4,000 for that $500 loan. Certainly some choice. This product, was developed as a way to evade that state's small loan lending caps. House Bill 2205 makes many important improvements, such as curbing interest-only loans, which trap borrowers with large balloon payments. However, the changes do not block lenders from developing other high-interest loan products. The only effective policy for ending 500% loans is a uniform cap on interest, and that's why we support reestablishing a 36% cap on all consumer loans. Just last October, Congress passed a uniform 36% cap for loans made to all military members. That means starting this October 2007, any member of the Oregon military and their family can walk into any lending institution in Oregon, be it a car title lender, a payday lender, or Bank of America, and they will pay no more than 36% interest. The impetus for the Congress's action was the fact that high-cost debt was putting our military in a difficult situation. We saw military readiness concerns with troop morale. In an effort to address these concerns, Congress took action. Our same families here, all Oregon families, are facing these similar types of family stresses due to debt. And it's time for us to extend this same type of protection to all Oregon families. The bills before you today, coupled with that uniform 36% interest cap, would give all Oregon consumers access to fair and affordable credit, putting us in line with the 11 states that have uniform interest caps, and again, extending the protections of the military, family, predatory lending ban to all Oregon families. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you for being here again. You mentioned, for instance, military families as one group. What can you tell me about the profile, demographics, patterns of what you know about folks that are borrowers in this market, and maybe specifically your constituency?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, my experience with individuals who take out these types of loans reaches back into the time that I spent at Oregon Food Bank as a public policy advocate. And part of my job there was to go out into the community across Oregon, small towns like Riddle, Oregon, larger towns like Portland, Oregon, and have conversations with people asking them, what's going on in your life? What challenges are you facing that you find yourself in line for a food box, despite the fact that you're often working? And what I heard about the types of challenges, the types of people that why the folks went into the these types of places to begin with, I alluded to in the beginning of my testimony. Often, lack of understanding of what their options were. This is very easy. They walk out their front door, and this is where they find an answer. So it's people who are working. To take out a payday loan, you have to have a paycheck. It's people who have a car, which is often their transportation to work. So they're no different than a lot of consumers in Oregon. I hope that answers your question.
Perfect. Question, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Thank you both for being here and for what you do for everybody. Would you favor a bill to give a tax credit for consumer debt? You're greatly concerned about our Oregonians and the amount of debt they have. We used to have this in effect.
Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, I couldn't speak to something like that before reading. I'd be very interested in exploring that type of concept, but I couldn't speak to legislation I'm not familiar with.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay. So when you're filing your taxes and you've got you've paid buku dollars on all your visas and master charges and your payday loans and your title loans or whatever, and then you have the opportunity to take a percentage of that against your tax payable taxes. That's what I'm talking about. The reason I'm asking that question is because, you know, we have all these many different ways to protect our Oregonians, and that program was, you know, really advantageous for individuals who were starting out and unfortunately had tough times and maxed out their visas and MasterCards. And most of those here who are going after these type of loans, you know, have no other opportunity because they've maxed those out, can't borrow against credit card. And that's what I'm talking about. I would appreciate if you would just, study this a little bit and give me your opinion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
Is this more appropriate for a work session? I'm really interested in the profile of the consumers that are affected by this, and I'm wondering if we've got that as a result of some of the testimony or the special session.
I'm sure we probably have that in testimony from last session, but
CBS has done analysis. So, is that more appropriate to get at another time? I mean, I'm not. She had some very good information about folks she has been in contact with, but I'm talking in terms of the entire state and so forth.
Give us an opportunity to ask the agency if they have any information, and we can try to get that to you at a later time. If there's no further questions of Ms. Martin, we'll move on with testimony from Laura Etherton.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of House Bills 2203, 2204, and 2205. My name is Laura Etherton. I'm the consumer advocate for Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest organization. We applauded when, during the special session, the Oregon legislature passed the bill to give consumers new protections from payday loans, previously unlimited interest rates and fees. Passing that important legislation really sent a message, I think, that charging consumers excessive rates and fees is, and having loan products that send consumers into really a cycle of debt from which many cannot recover is an unacceptable practice here in Oregon. And as you've heard, among its key provisions, the bill capped interest rates at 36% plus a one-time origination fee of $10 per 100, limited the number of rollovers to two, and gave consumers a full 31 days to repay those loans. We look forward to the law taking effect in July of this year, and we support these bills to follow up on that law. They both give important fixes to the law so that consumer protections are fair and effective, and we commend the governor and the Department of Consumer and Business Services for bringing these bills forward. First, starting with House Bill 2203, this bill will establish a much-needed database to track payday and title loans. This is an important tool to protect borrowers from becoming trapped in a cycle of debt. Many consumers, a great number of consumers, report not being able to repay their loans when they come due. A DCBS report found that about over 70% of consumers were reporting that they could not repay those loans when they first came due. Many consumers roll over those loans, paying another high fee each time. And then many consumers report, of course, having to take out yet another payday loan to pay off the first, another one to pay off those two. And you can imagine the cycle of debt that many consumers find themselves stuck in. Establishing a database system is a very important tool, both for government and for lenders, to track payday loans, to see whether there are multiple loans being taken out. And having this in place should help prevent lenders from inadvertently exacerbating the payday loan cycle of debt by bouncing borrowers between different lenders during that seven-day sort of waiting period between loans. We also support the provisions of 2203 that will apply Oregon's payday loan protections not just to bricks and mortar type of stores, but also to internet lenders and lenders that make their loans via the mail or via telephone. So that's a more of a fairness measure, protects consumers in any of the number of venues where they might take out a loan, and we think brings some fairness in the market as well. Regarding Senate Bill, or House Bill, sorry, 2204, this is a bill that OSPIRG supports as well regarding title loans. The title loan industry is different in some ways and similar in many ways to the payday lending industry in that they are short-term loans that focus on consumers who may not be eligible or aware of traditional loans that they may qualify for. The title loan companies require the consumer's vehicle title to be placed as collateral for the small loan, and that's a big difference. However, that means that the lender has the power to repossess the vehicle if the consumer cannot repay the loan or misses a payment, and that makes these loans very risky for consumers, frankly. As you've heard, a typical title loan can reach and exceed 300% annual interest rates, and frankly, that is a rate that is unacceptable here in Oregon, and businesses should be able to make loans to consumers that are within a fair and reasonable amount of interest and not ones that charge these excessive rates. Finally, we also support House Bill 2205, which codifies the current DCBS rule regarding conventional consumer finance licenses. OSPIRG also served on the advisory committee regarding the development of that rule, and we supported that rule. It will help to prevent payday lenders and other lenders from evading Oregon's interest rate limits and other protections, and believe actually it also improves the clarification for consumers that are taking out more conventional consumer finance loans to know what kind of education requirements are appropriate for those types of lenders and will give consumers more confidence. In closing, House Bills 2203, 2204, and 2205 follow up appropriately on the payday loan protections that were passed in the special session to improve enforcement, fairness, and close several loopholes that are already emerging that put consumers at risk. We encourage the committee to approve these bills and to continue to be vigilant. Predatory lending is a serious problem in Oregon and has been a rising problem over the years, and it will require ongoing vigilance to protect consumers from excessively high fees and rates that really do put the public at risk. And we thank you for your work on this issue and urge you to pass these bills. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Representing Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Martin, was our Oregon involved in the work prior, you know, during the interim up to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galizio, yes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up, Representative.
Okay. So my question is, in response to the testimony from Mr. Nelson, you seem to indicate that it was the amount of the origination fee that was perhaps the most significant element or part of the loan that was problematic for people we've been talking about. It wasn't as much the number of times that you can renew or the speed with which you can renew. So the bill 2204 says go from a $20 origination fee to a $10 fee. The bill says a $10 origination fee, and the car title loan representatives that we had prior to you said $20 would be more feasible. How about $15?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galizio. I first want to clarify a few things.
Sure.
When I talk about the most egregious part of these types of loans, it's the cost, whether it's the fee, it's the interest, it's the total cost of the loan. And when you add that up and end up at a number that calculates out to over 300% annual interest or APR, that's where we're calling these types of loans predatory. Also want to follow up my reading of the bill and my understanding of the request that was made is that it is currently $10 per 100, so it's not a flat $10. I heard the request moving that $10 to $20. I inferred that it was $20 per 100 was the request. We feel that the bill that was passed by lawmakers during the special session was a very reasonable level, and that's where we stay with our support, is at $10 per 100 for these short-term loans.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you. This this industry is not the cornerstone for an economic development plan in the state of Oregon. It's not my favorite industry. But I'm concerned about this because I hear your testimony, and I think it's very compelling when you talk about individual examples and people in a cycle of debt. But equally concerning to me is reports of the death of the industry altogether. So I guess my question is, how much thought have you put toward, if this goes away, what happens to those people? Because I'm concerned that this may or may not be an appropriate way to handle it, that they won't have any place to go except bouncing checks, getting into not just a dangerous cycle of debt, as you're describing, but also into a criminal situation because desperate people do desperate things. If you care to comment, I'd love to hear your comments.
I do. Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, That's an excellent question. And all along, I have testified and stated that our goal is not to just close down the avenue to 500% loans, but to take the opportunity to open up the door to affordable financial services. And we're fortunate that with the partnership of or leadership of organizations like DCBS and the governor's office, we've started down that road with credit unions. They are offering loans that are similar in look and feel to a payday loan. They're short-term. They're taken out against your paycheck. A couple other changes I want to mention with that. It wasn't just about developing a product with credit unions. It's about working to let people know that that product exists. So members of the coalition, which include social service agencies, faith-based agencies, workers' unions, we're taking our opportunity to get better information out to people who utilize these services. We're doing that through standard, you know, distribution of flyers. We're doing that through conversations, also looking at ways we can increase financial education for individuals. A couple other things that I'll mention include some innovative ideas that are out there, and I know many members of our coalition are interested in pursuing, and that is opportunities to move more folks who don't currently have bank accounts into mainstream financial institutions. I can give you more information on that later, but just want to let you know it is something very much on our mind. How do we open up that door as we close this one?
I have a quick follow-up, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Now, that's encouraging, but my question would be, in response, what if we hypothetically say this industry as we know it right now is gone just because they're out of business? It seems to me the kind of things you're suggesting are all good, but we do those things in inches, not miles. Mm-hmm. So what happens if this hole's gone? Do we have the resources to reach the kind of people and do the kind of education in the period of time that we need to meet people's financial needs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, two comments to that. First, I'll look to our history. For most of Oregon's history, we have had usury laws. From, I believe it's 1931 to 1981, we had an interest cap of 36%. People operated under that. Consumer credit grew under that. Our consumer economy grew under that. Do people meet with crisis and find themselves with too few places to go? Unfortunately, the answer is yes, and it will continue to be yes. And that's why we have so many helping agencies out in our community, whether they're faith-based social service agencies or other agencies that continue to catch people. I'll end by saying that our concern is that the payday loan, 500% loans, are not catching people and stopping them from crisis. They're drawing it out for a little while and making the jump off of that cliff all that much steeper. Mm-hmm. And that's when our helping agencies have to go out there and stop a whole lot of harm. And I can share with you the stories of people who come into agencies like Human Solutions in Portland asking for rental assistance because they were about to be evicted due to debt problems that they had gotten into. So these loans aren't solving a problem. So when a 500% interest goes away, we're not taking away a solution. We're forcing us to come up with real solutions.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. I appreciate it. Next, we'd like to call up Kevin Finney and John Mullen. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Please state your name and organization that you're with, if you're with one, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you on the subject of consumer lending practices. For the record, my name is Kevin Finney. I'm the Public Policy Director with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, an association of 17 Christian denominations, including Protestant, Catholic, and Orthodox bodies. This represents over 1,000 affiliated churches statewide. As you know, in the 2006 special session, the legislature began the important process of protecting consumers from irresponsible lending practices by regulating payday lenders. Among other things, this legislation limited the total interest and fees that lenders may charge on payday loans to a 10% origination fee plus up to 36% interest, calculated on an annual percentage rate basis. This was an important first step in protecting consumers and reducing the ability of irresponsible lending to exacerbate problems of indebtedness and poverty in the state of Oregon. Today, you are considering three more important measures. Together with HB 2202, which you heard earlier this week, these measures would extend reasonable regulation to retail check cashing businesses, to makers of title loans, and makers of more conventional consumer finance loans. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon supports these measures and applauds Governor Kulongoski and the Department of Consumer and Business Services for bringing them to your committee. We also urge you to go one step further and adopt a uniform across-the-board 36% APR cap on all consumer lending. Too often, payday lenders and others who market credit services to the subprime market have been quite clever and creative in devising new products to evade more specific and limited regulations. The DCBS proposals before you today take important steps to close some of the loopholes payday lenders and others may try to take advantage of as SB 1105 goes into effect. But other avenues remain, such as open-ended credit agreements. A uniform 36% APR interest rate cap on all consumer lending is needed as well. Consumer lending practices may strike some as an odd topic of concern for the religious community. In fact, religious concern with irresponsible lending has a long history and a clear scriptural basis. In particular, the prophetic books of the Hebrew Testament condemn fraud, usury, exploitation, and gross injustice, especially when directed at the poor. Christian and religious concern with consumer protection is rooted in our concern with maintaining a community that provides hope and opportunity to all of God's people. We recognize that financial instability and indebtedness erodes family stability, creates personal crisis, and may lead to greater poverty. Reasonable regulation that restricts irresponsible lending practices strengthens the moral fabric that holds our society together, while predatory lending undermines those bonds of trust and shared responsibility. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Finney. Do we have questions for Mr. Finney from the Representative Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. As a member of one of your member churches, I want to thank you for coming for your testimony, to give this testimony, and I applaud you for the service that you do to our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson, question?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Holby. Mr. Finney, thank you for, well, both of you, thank you for being here. Thank you for caring. What are you basing your 36% on?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we've seen is it's a figure that's used in many states as a reasonable level to cap interest rates. The experience with it, here with the payday loans is a first step here in Oregon. It's been a figure that has been mentioned, for instance, with pawnbrokers as a figure that's also been used there. I think, to some extent, you choose a number. It's somewhat arbitrary, but what we're trying to do is make sure we're not getting into a combination of origination fees and interest rates that's just unduly burdensome for the consumer. In terms of the interest, the specific figure, I think that's about all I can really say.
Follow up, please.
Follow up, Representative Nelson.
Chair Hovey, and I guess to members of the committee, and also to you gentlemen, I hope we don't start thinking 36% because, some other state is doing it. Most of us who have had visas and master charges and the critical parts of our life, getting out of college, just getting started, or in marriages where tough times hit, you know, we think 18% and 21% interest is usurious. I think 36% certainly is. So I just want to caution us against, you know, just automatically thinking that, you know, well, if in Florida they can afford 36, you know, percent, we should be able to do so here. That's my purpose.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Any further questions from the committee? Representative Bonamici?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Representative Gleaser?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, just check it in. Been kind of quiet over there. Next, we have up John Mullen. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Mullen. I'm a legislative advocate for the Oregon Law Center, and the Oregon Law Center works on behalf of low-income people all around the state of Oregon. My comments will be very brief today because I think that there's been some excellent testimony today. I first want to thank the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I also want to extend my thanks to the work that has been done by Our Oregon, and I believe that the testimony and the research and the work that has been done, I think, offers some compelling reasons why we need to look at some of these consumer issues this session. So it's my hope, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Law Center, that we can see progress being made on these consumer issues during this session. Thank you very much.
Questions from the committee? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is as much a comment, I think, as a question. First of all, I want to thank you both for your testimony here today. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the 36% that you have proposed in your letter, as well as it came up from other testimony earlier. And I wanted to thank Representative Nelson for her comments, but I also want to get some clarification from you that you are intending that as a cap, that it could not be gone above. And I'm sure that you would agree that consumer lenders would certainly be able to charge less than the 36%. And I also am a little bit, I guess, asking for clarification that are you talking about a 36% interest rate or a 36% annual percentage rate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is a 36% annual percentage rate. And I think, let me just say two things about this issue that I didn't initially include in my answer. You know, I think part of what we've seen develop in the sort of post-deregulation era in terms of consumer finance is a kind of situation where you really have a kind of bifurcated market for sort of well-income, you know, middle-income consumers. Thinking of paying anything close to 36% interest would be absurd. And as you point out with the credit cards, you know, we look at credit card offers and of 0% interest sometimes, and certainly think that anything up in the 18-20% range is, as you say, usurious. But for this sort of subprime market, people who are you know, in desperate need of cash on a short-term basis, they're looking at much more exorbitant kinds of interest rates, and so a 36% cap in many cases represents a great improvement. Now, should it be set lower than that? Perhaps. I haven't looked at the issue in enough detail to be able to answer that question, but I think part of the effort in setting it at 30% is to say, okay, in some cases these loans are more risky for the lender. There may be higher default rates, and so you don't want to set it so low as to put the industry out of business, as that concern has been expressed. So I think there is a kind of trade-off here between trying to cap it at a rate that does away with the most sort of predatory practices, if you will, but also allows for the industry to continue and to recognize some of the realities of lending in the subprime market.
follow up, please, Mr. Chair?
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify for the record that I want to make sure that when we're talking about this, that from a consumer protection point of view, that if we're talking about an interest rate cap, and then we have lenders who are then charging exorbitant fees because they want a way to get around the interest rate cap, and that's where I just want to make sure that if we're talking about the difference between interest rate and an annual percentage rate.
Sure.
Thank you.
Good point.
Further questions from the committee?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gilliam.
I'd be interested in both of you, your opinion, having observed this and now come to testify. What's your opinion on the future of the industry with the passage of these?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I don't have enough information to understand the complexities of this industry and what has been presented. I suppose it could be taken on face value as far as the testimony is concerned. But I think, again, the issue is looking at it from the perspective of the low-income people in the state of Oregon and the families and the struggles that they go through and the situations they can wind up in terms of debt. As I mentioned in testimony about the check cashing business, I had a 26-year career running an agency in Clackamas County that worked with elderly people with disabilities and low-income people. And from that perspective, we did everything that we could to provide education and try to help people get into the banking situation to build assets and to move out of poverty. So I really couldn't comment on what it would do to the industry. I do know what it does as far as low-income people and families are concerned.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, let me just say I think there is a tendency on the part of industries facing regulation to sometimes exaggerate the impact that the regulation may have on their industry. Some of my background is in the area of air pollution regulation, actually, and we've seen that a lot there out of the auto industry, and I suspect some of the same may be going on here. I would expect the industry to continue, but I will say based on many of the stories that I hear from within the faith community, which is often providing services directly to the poor, that the problem is severe enough, and people within the faith community have responded to this issue because of their experience in a kind of profound way. And I think they would say, if the impact was that the industry went away and we had to find other ways of providing consumer services, that would be better than continuing to allow people to get deeper into a cycle of debt and poverty. I don't think that's what the outcome will be, but I think that's what the response from many within the faith community would be.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for showing up and providing us your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Mullen, if you could provide us a written statement, since you're representing an organization, and follow up later with our committee staff to provide that for us for our records, that would be great. I love paper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That written testimony.
Next up on the list, Jan Amling, I believe, or... Thank you for coming, and please state your name and any organization you might represent before your testimony. Thanks.
My name is Jan Amling. I'm the Executive Director of Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Lynn Benton, Inc., which is in Albany, Oregon. Consumer Credit Counseling Service is a not-for-profit agency whose mission is to provide independent community services to help families avoid and solve debt problems by providing guidance, education, housing counseling, and direct services. As Executive Director of Consumer Credit Counseling Service, I have watched the spending patterns of families since joining the agency in 1979. The use of payday loans and other high-cost sources of credit have increased in popularity, usually among the credit-challenged and those who have tapped out their ability to get additional credit cards. By the time a consumer comes to my agency with short-term loans, they have often mired in debt and caught in a vicious cycle of getting additional short-term loans to repay existing loans and to make payments on other credit obligations. Some of the short-term lenders will work with our nonprofit debt repayment program, and others will not, instead preferring to use recourse spelled out in existing laws. In a perfect world, we would require all dispensers of credit to perform due diligence prior to extending credit. This would apply to credit card companies, car dealerships, short-term loan companies, and include an analysis of a borrower's financial status and ability to repay a loan. I am in support of a database whereby lenders can see if an applicant has existing unpaid short-term loans. One of the requirements of OARS 441 is that, quote, a short-term personal loan licensee may not make a payday loan to an applicant without forming a good faith belief that the applicant has the ability to repay the loan, end of quote. And, of course, by just getting a copy of a pay stub and a blank check does not verify that they have the ability to repay a loan. With a database available to lenders, they will have another tool to use to make this determination. I am in favor of measures to make emergency loans to people who realistically have a means to repay their debt over a period of several months and who are also encouraged to get help understanding budgeting. Regarding short-term loans, they need a limited number of renewals and a reduction of interest and fees paid, whether for payday or title loans. I think that the House bills that you're examining today will help consumers by reducing the cost of credit and extending the repayment time. I've attached a brief chart showing a random list of clients counseled in our agency who have payday loans. As you can see, these clients owe 22 times as much on their payday loans as they have available for repayment. They have an average of 2.7 loans outstanding and have average total debt that is 74% of their net annual income. Half of these clients came to receive pre-filing counseling for bankruptcy. When the bankruptcy legislation was initiated in October 2005, one of the provisions was that families that seek to file bankruptcy need to come to an agency such as ours to receive a 90-minute pre-filing counseling session. The primary purposes of that were to establish a realistic budget and to outline their alternatives to bankruptcy. Once the person received that certificate, they give it to the attorney. The attorney files it with the court. The court issues a legal document that has a case number on it. The client comes back to an agency such as ours for a two-hour educational session where we're going to try and teach them some new tricks financially so that they won't get into trouble again. These are all parts of the purposes of the EOUSD, the Executive Office of the U.S. Trustees. So our agency has been doing that pre-filing counseling and the pre-discharge education. So the chart on the back where it indicates whether the person came for regular or bankruptcy counseling, that's the distinction. So some of the people that we differentiate in this chart as regular counseling, the last column, were people that came to us with the intention of repaying their bills. The other people that are listed as bankruptcy came to us because they were fulfilling the requirement. So you can see that there can be a big difference in the amount of debt that they've got. The people that file bankruptcy tend to have more than 100% of their income in debt. People that come for repayment usually have less than 100%. So there's some interesting statistics on this sheet that show, from our perspective, we look at the net income, we look at their living expenses, how much is left over to repay their bills. I doubt that that's happening in the payday loan industry. So all they're looking at is what their income is and trying to make a determination whether the person deserves to have a payday loan. So there's problems with the process. So that's my testimony. I'm in favor of the bills because I feel that they help give the families a little bit more protection.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee? Representative Bonamici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you for your testimony. I'm very familiar with the work of consumer credit counseling, and I know you do a great service for the community, and this is very helpful to see what happens when people get continuously in debt, and appreciate your being here. Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none,
Would you like to add something? Food for thought. In general, a question was asked about a tax break for people that have big tax burdens. In general, if you're going to be talking people that are down around the poverty level, and if that's what you think are taking out these types of loans, usually their net income and their gross income are about the same, just because they probably don't pay many taxes. So there probably wouldn't be much of a tax break for them.
Thank you very much for that, and thank you for your patience in waiting to near the end of this hearing. I'd also like to read into the record that we have testimony from the City of Portland, Oregon, Dan Saltzman, Commissioner, and he's in favor of 2203, 2204, and 2205. And we also have testimony from Nathan Groff, Chief Government Relations Officer of Veritech. And he is submitting written testimony, and it appears that he is in favor. Let me verify that first. Or maybe he's just providing information. I don't see a statement of info or not. Right. It's information about the database. So he's really not in favor or opposed. Sir, we got just a few minutes left. Is there anybody else that would like to provide a statement on these three House bills, 2203, 2204, or 2205? Representative Nelson, would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to testify. Chair Hovey, could we bring Corey back up here? Because there's just something about this process that bothers me a great deal.
She provided extensive testimony at the beginning of the committee, but if she's so willing to come up, we just have a few minutes. That would be acceptable.
I just want to ask one question. We should probably... have the answer around the tip of our fingers.
Ms. Streisinger, can you restate your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. Yes, Corey, thank you for coming back up. But in your document, we talk about licensed, what do we call them? What do we call these people? Licensed loan officers?
Lenders.
Licensed lenders? But then further in the testimony, it talks about the unlicensed. And so my whole thought here is, why do we have unlicensed lenders? Why do we have unlicensed pawn brokers? Why do we have unlicensed construction contractors? And we expect a portion of our, professional business management in the state to abide by certain rules, and then we give exceptions with little sanction. For example, as I read in this document, the only sanction on an unlicensed lender is that he can't go after a bad debt. And so I'm just curious, so why don't we just say anyone in this business must be licensed, let's all work in the same, under the same procedure, same reporting process. And I have particular concern to these Internet lenders.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's a very interesting question, and it's an oddity of how our consumer finance lending laws are structured historically. And if we were writing them afresh today,
we would
write them that way.
Okay.
In fact, in order to be a consumer finance lender, you do have to be licensed, except that you can make loans under ORS Chapter 82, which is the vestige of Oregon's usury law, which imposes a 12% interest rate cap. So if you choose to limit your lending to 12% annual percentage rate or interest rate or less, you actually can legally in Oregon make loans without having one of our consumer finance licenses. Now, that is not true for payday lending under this new law, and it would not be true for title lending under the law that we've proposed, that you would actually be required to be licensed in order to legally make a loan in Oregon. But currently, under current law, there is an exception for lenders who aren't located in Oregon if the loan is legal where it is made. which could be offshore or in another state. And so the purpose of that provision of our proposed bill actually would be to say, if you're making a loan to an Oregonian, you need to be licensed here in Oregon to the same extent as someone else, which means that if you're going to make loans above 12%, you actually do need to be licensed. But it is a very odd statute. If you think about many of the types of professions that people enter into in Oregon, the way the law is written is if you're going to do X, you have to be licensed.
Right.
And that is true with a number of our other types of regulatory statutes. You actually can't engage in this type of pawnbroking is an example. You actually, if you're going to engage in the type of business that meets the legal definition of pawnbrokers, the law requires you to be licensed, and we can take enforcement action against you if you're not. But in consumer finance lending, oddly enough, that's not the case. And if we have actually thought about should we spend next interim trying to rewrite the law and straighten it out, and maybe the answer is yes. It's we didn't take that on this time because, you know, frankly, there's sort of specific problem areas that have come to us, but it has been on our minds because of that very odd situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am so glad it's on your mind because it's certainly on mine, and it's just, you know, I don't know what. It's just very difficult for me to understand it, and I think in a very critical, you know, area of our lives, of our, you know, business environment. So I hope we do step out and look into this.
Thank you.
Representative Bonamici, you have a...
Can I ask a question now that Mr. Eisinger's back?
You most certainly may.
Thank you very much. I want to ask a follow-up question that I asked after your testimony to both Mr. Nelson and Mr. Tressiter, who I believe have left the room, about the number of title lenders and how many of them are, if you're aware of, how many of them just do title loans? Because they're insisting that they're going to go out of business, but I wonder, are they already doing other types of loans? Or are most of them combined with other lending, or... Are they just exclusively title lenders?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I'd like Mr. Tatman to address that.
Thank you. Good.
For the record, this is David Tatman with the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, at this point, there are no title lenders that are only title lenders in the state of Oregon. Nobody that has that single license. What we have are 96 licensees who hold both payday lending licenses and title lending licenses simultaneously. What we have seen is most of the title lending companies have done what we are proposing to do in 2205 or prevent in 2205, and that is move over under our traditional consumer finance license and use that as a vehicle for making the loans. In fact, Northwest Title, the company that was represented by Mr. Nelson and Mr. Tressiter, is actually licensed as a consumer finance company, not as a title lender. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do is address that and clarify that if you're going to conduct that kind of business, that you have a certain type of license, and then we'll have you report so that we can track that activity, and that certain restrictions that should apply for that type of conduct is already in place.
So, brief follow-up?
Briefly, please.
Thank you. Very briefly. So would it be your opinion then that there wouldn't be companies that would be going out of business, but it may be that they may stop offering a particular type of loan?
Speaking personally, Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I think that's correct. Now, to be fair to Northwest Title, they have applied to obtain the title lending licenses. So they originally were title lenders, they went into the conventional finance, and now they're reapplying. I think that's an anticipation of the conventional finance license restrictions that they probably wouldn't work within. They, for instance, might actually go out of business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, we would like to close the public hearing on 2203, 04, and 05 and adjourn this meeting. Thank you.